This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. A long, painful war ended 30 years ago this weekend.
The evacuation has now been completed. The President commends the personnel of the armed forces who accomplished it, as well as Ambassador Graham Martin and the staff of his mission, who served so well under difficult conditions. This action closes a chapter in the American experience.
Then White House Press Secretary Ron Nessen. President Gerald Ford chose not to speak on that day in 1975. It was an unceremonious end to an unofficial war.
At its height, there were more than 500,000 American servicemen and women in Vietnam. Yet in its final years, it was Vietnamese blood that was being spilled in the rice paddies. Under the conditions of a 1972 truce with Hanoi, the U.S. was playing a supporting role in the conflict.
The final curtain fell on April 29th and 30th, 1975. North Vietnamese troops had won all the battles that were to be won, and they marched into Saigon. To Americans, the news came as no surprise.
From CBS News headquarters in New York, this is the CBS Evening News, with Dan Rather substituting for Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. A quarter century of American involvement in South Vietnam is over. At mid-afternoon, Saigon time, an armada of 81 U.S. Marine helicopters descended on the South Vietnamese capital. More than 6,000 persons, as many as 900 of them Americans, the rest Vietnamese and third country nationals, were evacuated. Plucked from the U.S. embassy grounds, from rooftops throughout the city, and from the nearby Thon Son-nut Airport.
The Americans who had remained in Vietnam knew the end was coming. U.S. officials had even arranged a signal. When Bing Crosby crooned White Christmas on Armed Forces Radio, Americans were to flee.
South Vietnamese who worked with the U.S. were promised transportation out, and thousands did make it out during the 18-hour evacuation, but many were left behind.
From the beginning of the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, politicians and pundits made predictions about what would happen if the United States failed to stand up to communism in the region. An example was a speech President Lyndon Johnson made 10 years before the fall of Saigon.
To abandon this small and brave nation to its enemies and to the terror that must follow would be an unforgivable wrong. We're also there to strengthen world order around the globe from Berlin to Thailand, our people whose well-being rests in part on the belief that they can count on us if they are attacked. To leave Vietnam to its fate would shake the confidence of all these people in the value of an American commitment.
NPR's foreign editor, Lauren Jenkins, was a reporter for Newsweek magazine during the war. He was among those lifted from the roof of the U.S. Embassy in the waning hours of the evacuation of Saigon. He's back there today, and despite all the dire U.S. warnings of what would happen if the communists won, Jenkins says in this commentary, much remains the same.
Here in the heart of the city, the grotesque concrete statue of a towering South Vietnamese army soldier is gone. But the ornate opera house that the French built still stands in all its glory. And the elegant Continental Hotel, where I lived and worked during the war, is thriving on the city's new tourist boom. Change is more often in name than in substance. The Rue Catinat of the French colonial era, that I, in my time, knew as Tuzo Street, is now Dong Hoi Street. But it remains a haven to street urchins, pirated booksellers, and beggars. It is still populated by the old mix of hustlers, hawkers, and hookers. The Catholics of the South, who so feared their future if the communists triumphed, still go to Mass unimpeded at their towering, twin-spired National Cathedral. And only two blocks further, the U.S. Stars and Stripes ripples again in the muggy Saigon air above a new, low-slung consulate built to replace the old embassy. The original six-story building from which we fled in 1975 was razed after relations with Hanoi were restored in 1994, an effort, I suspect, to erase that symbol of flight. But walking the old streets of the city, dodging floods of motorbikes and cars, stepping around sidewalk noodle stalls, past internet cafes and fancy dress shops, it is easy to forget that war, now 30 years distant.
It is estimated there are more than a million Vietnamese children and adults affected by Agent Orange. Tens of thousands of them have died, while feeble ones are suffering the physical twisting pain day by day.
It takes a visit to the city's War Remnants Museum to be reminded. Videos of the lingering damage of America's Agent Orange defoliants play hourly. Vietnamese and foreign tourists pick their way past U.S. M-48 tanks and Huey helicopters to view vivid photo exhibits of such U.S. atrocities as the My Lai massacre. This was the war successive American leaders said was vital to save Asia and Western civilization. In a war in which 58,000 Americans and perhaps as many as 3 million Vietnamese died before Washington called it quits. Saigon these past few days has been gripped in a celebratory mood. The city has resounded with street concerts and dances. Yellow-starred red flags jut from every house. For what we Americans remember as the fall of Saigon, the Vietnamese venerate as Reunification Day. The city is festive and clearly booming, despite lingering poverty in the countryside. The people are industrious, and free enterprise is beginning to emerge just as it has in neighboring China. Detractors are quick to point out that there is no political freedom in Vietnam under its one-party communist rule. But as I remember it, there wasn't any political freedom either under the old South Vietnamese government that Washington supported. The country is at last at peace. It isn't crippled by its past, but looking solidly into the future to more progress unimpeded by war.
Commentary from NPR's Lauren Jenkins from Ho Chi Minh City. You can read an essay by Lauren on the fall of Saigon and follow coverage of the anniversary of the war's end at npr.org.